In American society, money is a taboo topic. We're taught at a young age it's improper to talk about it, but we're also bombarded with messages about the power and importance of money in our everyday lives. And by not talking about it, we miss out on the skills and lessons we need to effectively understand and financially plan. That changes today. Welcome to Money Tales. Hosted by Sandy Brager and Cami Doder, Money Tales brings more than 35 years of combined professional experience in personal finance to demystify money and demonstrate what it's like to speak openly about personal financial matters. Join us each episode as they interview modern-day movers and shakers about how money decisions intertwine with their daily lives in order to give you better insight into productive financial conversations. Subscribe today and register for our blog Fathom at esperient.com/podcasts to increase your money mojo. And now, here's Cami and Sandy.
Mirella Sula is our guest this week on Money Tales. At the age of 16, Mirella found herself in her home country of Albania, engaged to be married. Not because of a teenage romance or a whirlwind courtship, but because of something much darker: the risk of being sold into prostitution. Upon accepting the proposal, Mirella made her fiancé promise that he would allow her to continue her studies. If he didn't, she vowed to simply disappear. That promise was Mirella's lifeline. She was married by the age of 18, trading her freedom for safety. Mirella lived with a large family in a small village where there was no money to even discuss. Her role was clear: to wash, to clean, and to serve the family. At the same time, she continued to pursue her education, gaining knowledge, and with that came confidence and exposure to the outside world. As Mirella progressed in her studies, she began to understand the importance of financial independence and worked aggressively toward it. Today, Mirella resides in England. She is CEO and founder of Global Women Magazine and Global Women Club. She's an internationally recognized leader in the fields of media, education, and women's empowerment. Mirella is the owner of 5 magazines, author of 15 books, leader of 27 club chapters around the world, and the organizer of more than 500 events. Mirella has received many awards and accolades for her accomplishments. Her last book, Don't Let Your Mind Go, is a bestseller.
Here are 3 key money topics Mirella hits on in this conversation. First, what it was like to have grown up in communist Albania, where money was considered a bad thing. Second, how money comes when you know your purpose. Mirella's experiences repeatedly demonstrate how whenever she really wanted or needed to achieve something, she would find the money. And third, how the lack of confidence and the lack of money caused many women to stay in abusive relationships for a long time. We hope you share this episode with a friend, and please subscribe to Money Tales on your favorite podcast platform. Now on to our conversation with Mirella Sula.
Welcome to the Money Tales podcast. I'm Cami Doder.
And I'm Sandy Brager. Cami, I am still laughing from our evening last night.
That was really fun to see Paul Olinger on stage doing his comedy routine.
For some of our fan listeners, you might remember our episode with Paul a while back. He's a former Facebook employee who left the firm and became a stand-up comedian. It was really fun to see him on stage. I would say, Cami, maybe almost half of his act had to do with money.
It was fascinating, Sandy. And I appreciate that humor sometimes helps us have difficult money conversations.
Absolutely, especially when there's a disconnect and there's so much laughter and disconnects between him and his children, him and his wife, his children and his parents. I really appreciated that. I think it is a nice technique for people to keep in their toolbox when having difficult money conversations. Humor can help lighten the load, but you have to be careful about when you use it. Paul is just a master at the pause, leaving time for that joke to sink in. That helps too.
I'm glad you underscored the value of using humor and then the being careful of it. And I will recommend to anyone out there, definitely, if you can go see Paul live, I highly recommend it.
You will not be disappointed.
Well, let's move to our guest today. Mirella Sula, it is really special to be talking with you on the Money Tales podcast.
Thank you so much, ladies. I'm very much enjoying your conversation, and definitely you have found a good formula to bring people to money topics.
Thanks for saying that. Marella, would you introduce yourself and share a couple pivotal moments that have taken place in your life that really impacted who you are today?
Thank you. Well, as you know, life is a journey, and it's a long journey. For me, it looks like it has given me the opportunity to change a lot and to redirect myself in different levels and different paths. And that gives you the excitement of feeling alive. And money has to do a lot with it, because many times we have dreams and we think that when we grow up, everything is going to be magic. We're going to solve all problems of the world. We don't need money for anything. We just need a desire, a dream. And then as we grow up, that gets more vanished on the way. And one of the reasons why money dreams get lost on the way, it's because we really underestimate the power of money.
Good point.
It is powerful.
It has been a big wake-up call for me to realize that, in fact, until I sort out the issues with money, there is not such dream to come true. And money is the very first big issue. I've been working with women who have been abused, and I've been in that place myself as well. And I'm telling you, if we solve the issues that we have with money from the past, there is no other issue that women have. Because money takes away our confidence, takes away our dreams, takes away our aspirations. It injects fear, injects dependency, and it makes us feel guilty and shamed. And everything is around that area. Also, love is connected with money. Also, all kinds of relationships are connected with money. I work with women around the world, and even though they don't mention money, at the end of the conversation journey that we try to take ourselves, we realize that, in fact, everything is connected with money.
It's amazing, isn't it? Marella, where did you grow up?
I grew up in a very small village in north part of Albania. At that time, Albania was a communist regime country. We hardly could talk about money because money was a bad thing, and everything was everybody's thing. There was no such thing called private. Everything was shared, and what is mine is yours, and what is yours is mine. And no matter how hard you work, everybody should get the same. There was not fair way of rewarding people. It was only the communist way.
I'm curious. That is communism. But what's happening on the ground in people's families? Are people believing that?
We were believing it.
No focus on money. We don't need it.
No. It was bad. If people talk about money, that was a bad thing.
You grew up believing money was bad. And define bad.
People with money, they were bad people. People with money, they had done bad things to achieve that. Even later on, when the democracy came and things changed, very soon, to be honest, there must be some truth in there as well. But very soon, people started doing dodgy things to manage to get money. And immediately, that went even worse. So the belief about money, it went even worse, because at the beginning, we were brainwashed that money, you don't need money to achieve things in life. You can buy things with air. At that time, I didn't know how did we end up in this house, or how do we put food in the table? That was something that we never realized how things work out. But then I was at the age of 16 when the communist regime ended and we started seeing some liberation where we could see what other countries are doing, because we're an isolated country. We were not allowed to watch TV or to travel. We were not allowed to travel in any other country apart from, even inside internal, we had to take permissions to travel. I never had an imagination how the world outside Albania is because I even didn't have a TV. I mean, we had a TV like 2 hours, but everything was controlled. We didn't know what exists in the other side of the world.
Controlled content. Wow, Mirella.
We were living in a bubble. But when democracy came and people started moving on and they started finding out that we're missing out, there is so much out there in the world. We have been living in a bubble and we thought we are happy, but in fact, no, that was a lie. That's not the truth. Because of that openness and because of that chaos that started, we started experiencing and seeing in the country, it took 2 decades to see some stability in the country because it was a lot of internal war and people protesting to get democracy. And it was quite a big chaos in the country. Together with that chaos came a lot of fear and uncertainty, especially with young girls. At that time, I was 16. We saw girls going after the dream to leave the country and aspiring that they can achieve something incredible, that it's not possible to find it here. And they were manipulated by men to go and find a job or to go and study or to go and get more money. And they were sold or prostitutes. I heard a few stories from some girls that we had in school that they were a victim of trafficking. I got scared and I said yes to the first man who proposed me. I said, please take me, save me.
You were so afraid of being sold into prostitution. Oh my goodness.
Yes. And so I got engaged at the age of 16 and I got married at the age of 18. My job was not to know anything about money because my job was to wash, to clean, to serve. I got married in a very small village in a big family and there were 8 men, 11 people. So my job was to wash, to clean, to serve. We never had money to discuss anything about it because everything that we were eating was produced in the village. The milk with the cow, or the cheese, or the bread, or everything was produced there. We didn't need money to go and buy anything.
So, Mirella, how long were you in that relationship for? And what shifted? Because your life, as you said before, you've had a journey, and this is fascinating to hear your backstory.
So that took me quite a long time. But what started shifting on me that made me to question that life was when I lost my daughter. And I have a TEDx talk about it. So I lost my daughter and I went into a really dark moment of my life where I didn't want to live anymore. But very soon after, I realized I was pregnant again and I was scared to take any action. So what happened is then I didn't have a choice. I just thought, I need to find a solution. How do I win this battle with my negative thinking and depression? And at that time, I never heard anything called psychology, or I never knew what it is. I even didn't know what negative thinking is. I never heard about anything called depression. It was quite something to discover on my own.
How old are you at this point in your life?
I was 23, 24. Then I started reading books. I loved reading and writing. I was very good in writing poems. And I remember if there is something that really saved my life is writing. So I remember I started writing a book about my daughter. I was writing and crying and writing and crying. Later on, I read a quote saying, it's not the book that you read, it's the book that you write that heals you. And that book has really healed me because as I was writing, I was experiencing some healing subconsciously. I started liberating myself from guilty feelings and everything that I was going through. To keep it to the topic, one thing that I remembered when my ex-husband, when he proposed me, I said to him, yes, I will say yes, but I really want you to promise me something. You will allow me to study. Because I was an A-star student. And because he said yes, I just didn't discuss it. I said, okay, but just so you remember, if at any time of our marriage. You threaten this promise. I will just disappear. I'll leave you.
Why was that so important to you?
I gave up my freedom with that promise. So I knew from the moment I get married, my freedom is over. But I knew that also I could get safety and I could get some kind of security and a place where I feel that I can continue, maybe in a slow way, but I can play safe. I think that is something that was going in my mind, because this is how I've been walking slowly to follow my dream. And because my parents were divorced and I grew up with my stepfather, who just happened not to be that nice, I knew that they were not going to support my education. There was no way. I mean, all the time, my mom used to say, if you want to go to university, go to your husband, find a man, and he should invest in you. We have done our job. And I understand.
So did your husband invest in you? Because that's a strong message.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it works. What I started when in that little village, once a month, I would walk about 1 hour and a half because there was no car or no road to go to the little town, and get lots of books and come to the village and sit under the trees and read. And I registered myself for university part-time, where I would go twice a year to give exams. But I had to take a bus for 8 hours to go there twice a year.
Mirella, you're amazing. You persevere. You introduced this idea in the beginning that money can take away dreams and can make us feel guilty, but also money can create opportunities. And I'm curious, as you talk about your dreams, when did money become something that you thought about or talked about?
The very first time money became a big alarm for me is when my daughter got sick and we didn't have money to go to the hospital to find healing, to find doctors, or to find medication, or to find a solution for her. And it started bringing me some red flags as well into the whole belief system that I had, that we don't need money, we're okay. Because one of the reasons why daughter came sick in this world is because we didn't have money to travel and go to do your checkup when you are pregnant. I was very far away. I couldn't go and do my checkups. We didn't have a medical center. We didn't have doctors in the village. We didn't have anybody. So I remember once this, I said to my ex-husband, we should go and do some checkup. And we went and everything was broken. And then they said, it doesn't work today. You have to come back. And to come back, we needed more money. We had already invested lots of money to go to that trip. And then we came back and it didn't happen. And then we needed to save some more money to go and do it again. And we just gave up. We said, it should be okay. We're not going. That was a big thing that made me think why I didn't do my duty as a mother. It's because it was not in my hand. We didn't have money to go and do that checkup. And then later on, money became a bigger issue as I was studying. I needed to go and do my exams. And that was quite a bit of investment. And every time we didn't have money, my ex-husband would feel out of his comfort zone. And he would say, do you really want this? Do you really need this? And I would always say, you remember, we have a deal. If you do not support me on this, I leave. I found myself saying this many times.
Wow. So did money have more of a meaning as you were studying? Was your goal to use your education?
Oh my God, yes. I could not imagine myself without a degree.
And was that acceptable to the family that you were a part of?
There were 8 brothers, and I was the only woman that was pursuing her degree and her education. None of them ever even claimed it.
You had a vision.
Because you had this deal, you kept going, and your husband had no other choice but to support that.
No choice. The family was most of the time saying, this is not needed. But then they supported me. They saw how committed I was, and they were very nice. they saw that I was really passionate about it. I was crazy about it. And at some point, I must be honest, I saw their support and they were doing whatever it takes to put the money together and support me on that journey. And many times, if my husband didn't have time to come with me, his sister would take the bus for 8 hours or 10 hours to be with me, wait behind the door until I give the exam, and then buy me some food because I didn't have any money. She would take care of me and, yeah, would come back home midnight.
This is an astounding beginning to the journey of your life. How did you make it to London? And tell us about that shift, because there must have been a severe turn in the journey.
Long journey. So what happened next is when my daughter got sick, for the very first time, I discovered the capital city of Albania. I realized that, oh my God, life is so different here. So we went to the hospital. I spent 3 weeks in the hospital with my daughter trying to save her.
How old was she at the time, Marella?
It was 6, 7 months. I spent 3 weeks in there. Even though I was going through that grief and through that pain, that was another shock to discover that the life I'm living, it's a different world. And when I went back and I lost my daughter, I was not only in the grief of losing my daughter, but I felt like I have lost myself because I felt like I don't have a purpose to live. Everything started having a different meaning. As I started healing myself, I convinced my ex-husband to move, at least in the town. Soon after, we moved into the town.
Into the capital of Albania?
No, in the little town, not in the capital.
Oh, the little town. Okay. Just taking steps.
Yeah. So after a few years from the little town, once I discovered the capital city, I started going there more. I found the way and reasons to go there, a conference or something. So I started studying and searching and seeing what other people are doing. So a few years later, somehow I managed my ex-husband to move to the capital city. And that was perfect timing because I had just finished my degree. I moved to Tirana as a village woman, but with a degree at least.
Amazing. Then you go to London. How in the heck do you get to London?
It was in 2001 when I moved to Tirana. It took me 11 years in Tirana. But somehow the universe really was in my side. And in 10 years, I achieved everything. I did another master degree in counseling psychology because I had put a challenge on myself that I really want to discover what this depression is. So I wanted to study for myself. And that was a lot of money to invest. I studied in Sheffield University. So I had to leave abroad to study to do that master's. And then I did another master degree, which was also a lot of money on positive psychotherapy. So I had to heal my mindset first. And then I realized it's a lot of to do with mind. And I specialized in family therapy. I created the very first magazine called Psychologist. The Psychologist magazine is famous. I created it in Albania as well. I started teaching at university. So I became aware that if you want to pursue a dream, you really have to have money. Because if I didn't have that money to go and do my master's, I would still be in Albania.
This is incredible. So you're generating money. You're becoming this entrepreneur. You've taken your refocused life purpose, invested in it, and now you're generating income on that investment. What's happening to your former marriage at this time?
For me, it's like once you want something, somehow it happens. The money comes once you become aware that you really need that money for that particular purpose. So it's a purpose-driven problem. It's not just the money thing. Every time I really desperately wanted something, I would find the money. I need the money to do my degree. Somehow the whole family mobilized and helped me to get the degree. And then I really wanted to go to Tirana, capital city. I was praying and crying every night. And my husband would say, we don't have the money. We don't have the money. How can we go there? We don't have the money. And then very soon after, somehow, it's a miracle, I discovered, because I never met my father until I got married, I discovered my father had an amazing sister. And his sister had managed to go to capital city. And her daughter, with her husband, had made lots of money.
So you have role models.
Somehow, I ended up winning a competition when I was in the village from the public television. And I made them proud. They heard about me. They never met me before. And when I wanted to move to Tirana, I asked them for help. I said, thank you so much for encouraging me for what I've done so far, for getting a degree and for publishing. I published a book when I was in a village because I won a competition. I won a national competition and they sponsored my book. And because they were very impressed that a village woman knows how to write poems. So I went with that book to my rich auntie and her daughter. I said, please help me to come to Tirana.
And they helped.
They bought me a house. Of course, they put me in a plan where I have to pay back. But that's a miracle. It never happens.
And now you are in London running businesses, being an entrepreneur, being super successful. Do you ever talk with your family about the support they gave and your dreams and how you got here?
I had to leave everything behind. So I managed to have everything in Albania. I got a very luxury apartment in the most luxury part of Albania. Beautiful office just in front of my apartment. On TV every day. Editor-in-chief of Psychologist magazine. Teaching at the university. The first director of Positive Psychotherapy Center, leading the Equality Women in Decision-Making to bring women in parliament. So I achieved everything I wanted.
Top of your game, and then you leave it behind.
And then a moment came where I just had to leave. So I left everything. I left my husband, my house, my apartment, my job. I resigned. I just quit. I came to London with a handbag and my teenager son, with only 2-3 months savings to live, in a student visa with no permission to work in this country. I was terrified. I didn't have money. I was homeless, jobless. I didn't have money to pay my rent. My son was very upset because he left a luxury apartment, his own room, private school, and now he's sleeping in the floor in a studio flat. And he obviously was not happy. And that was the biggest, biggest moment where money was a big issue. Because I had the landlord coming every day saying, get out of the apartment, you haven't paid the rent. And I had to pay my PhD fees, which I couldn't. And I couldn't find a job because I was Albanian, because I was in student visa, because I didn't have the right to work fully, only part-time. Nobody wanted a part-time Albanian single mother.
How did the universe come together with you this time?
I remember when I called a friend of mine and she said, forget about you have been famous in Albania. You were lucky. You managed to come from the village. You made it once. Now start as we all start. I said, tell me, how do you start? I said, cleaning. Just clean. I said, I don't mind. Just want money to buy food for my son. And then she found me a job as a cleaner.
Pride didn't hold you back. You just did it?
Oh my God, no. When I moved here, I was 100% sure I was here to make it. I never was worried. I never was uncertain. I knew it was just a temporary sacrifice. And I was so much enjoying it. I must say, probably there were moments where I was, of course, down and sad. And what do I do next? My problem was next day. It was not next year. I remember when I went to university, I had a free coaching provided. And this guy said, why are you applying to work in the library? You have great skills. You know, imagine yourself in 10 years. I said, stop it. I know who I'm going to be in 10 years. I don't need your help. I just need tomorrow. I need now. In 10 years, you will not have the chance to speak with me. Sometimes it makes me laugh because it reminds me that somehow I knew that I was going to achieve what I have achieved today. It was just a matter of, what do I do now? How do I survive this evening with no food?
Your tale is one of resilience, persistence, goal, and purpose. Tell us, what is your next money conversation going to be, and who is it going to be with?
Now, here's the thing. I found a job, part-time job, and I started running workshops for an amazing charity which helps women who have been abused. And I was running a workshop, a series of workshops in 6 weeks. At the end of week six, I would divide women in two parts because there are 6 weeks journey, six stages of domestic abuse. And then at the end of the workshop, I would ask women, part one of the group one, list me everything, why women stay so long in an abusive relationship. Because in the stage three, we realize that this is not a problem that has to do with us anymore. This is a definition called abuse. This is not because he's upset with me or did something wrong. And many times we have wake-up calls and we realize how stupid I was. I didn't see that was an abuse. It's so hard for women to define abuse. But once we define abuse, it still takes so long for us to get out of it. Some women, they stay forever. It takes so long. And some women, then, boom, they say, that's not my problem. It's your problem. I move. I go.
Well, is that why you moved to London?
Yes. One of the biggest reasons. I think I had a wake-up call as well. But the group two, also I asked, list everything that you think a woman gets the courage to leave the abusive relationship. What makes a woman get that courage and say, enough is enough, I go. And then both groups, they came with lots of reasons and we clustered the factors. And the top two factors in both groups were the same. A woman stays in an abusive relationship for so long, lacking confidence and lacking money. A woman managed to leave the abusive relationship once she built some confidence and has some savings to escape. If you do not have savings to escape, you're stuck forever. And that's why the perpetrators make sure that they isolate the woman, the victim, and make sure that they create a coercive control where she has no access to the family, no access to the friends, no belief, no faith, no confidence. So she is fully dependent on him. And that was my why. I said, I have found a problem. And I'm going to work. How do I find a solution so women do not, from at least when they realize that there is something wrong here, they have to move immediately. And the whole ethos of Global Woman is we help women build confidence and make their own money.
So you have money conversations every day.
A lot. And lots of women in our platform, they are so ashamed to talk about money. They are blocked to talk about money. And what I have realized while working with Global Woman, women are great on building competence, building skills, building wisdom, experiences. They are amazing. And they're broke. And I say, when women come to me and say, what's your dream, darling? What do you want to do? I say, I want to build a school in Kenya. I don't know. I'm just making it up now. And I said, yeah, but you just told me that you don't have money to survive this month. You can't give something that you don't have. So let's work on you first. So let's learn how to make money. And then when you have some money, then go and give it anywhere. I meet women say, oh, I'm not here for the money. I'm not here for the money. I said, no problem. No, no, no. Okay. So, but you told me that you want to build this company. Whatever. So how are you going to build it? Let's talk about money. I invite speakers and talk about money. I talk a lot about this case. Many times I share. There was a woman and stood up. I said, I didn't come here. I thought Global Woman, it's different, but obviously I'm very disappointed. And she stood up in front of 300 people. I said, what happened? I said, because every speaker is just talking money, money, money. Now, because of that story, and then we sorted it out, every time I start a conference or something, raise your hand if you have allergy of money. Otherwise, you're in the wrong place.
Oh, Marella, you're really demonstrating such important messages. I love, like, let's work on you first before we work on some other problem. And then when someone says, I'm not here for the money, it's like, but how are you going to achieve your dreams? You're really having important money conversations and you're the right person to have these conversations because you got history that you can say, I'm not just talking from a platform. I've been in your shoes and it's really powerful. Would you share with our listeners, where's the best place to find you?
If you Google Mirela Sula, you find a lot, but Global Women Club, it's a platform that we have created. And we have an app as well. If you have an iPhone or any device, just go in App Store and search Lobby Global Women Club. We have an app with over 30,000 members there from all over the world. We have an online academy. We have lots of content to educate women about money and everything else that they need to follow their dreams and grow their career. And of course, social media everywhere, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, Facebook.
Good. Well, Mirela, thank you for sharing your journey. As you said, it's a long journey and some really heartache and sadness and learning and now empowerment. We really appreciate you sharing all that with us on Money Tales.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for doing what you do, because it's a very important topic.
Thanks for listening to the Money Tales podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, share it with someone you think would benefit from listening, and leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. Your ratings and reviews help more people find our podcast. If you're inspired to gain clarity and peace of mind about financial matters, don't hesitate to reach out to our team at Asperient. Go to asperient.com/start-a-dialogue. Or you can email Sandy and me at podcasts@asperient.com. See you next time.